I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth Podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
Do you work for or run a business? You can now raise awareness and funds for urgent change by joining the Brain Tumor Charity's brand new campaign, Businesses Against Brain Tumors. By declaring yourself a business against brain tumors and taking on your very own Brain Power Challenge, you can raise funds for vital medical research while improving your own brain health at the same time. People have shaped our world and facilitated amazing amounts of progress through business. Organizations are connecting people every day, innovating in the face of challenges like the pandemic and creating products that make up our culture. Now is the time to take that power and put it into good by beating brain tumors. And we all know there's power in numbers. Brain tumors are still the biggest cancer killer of children and adults under 40, with treatments having changed very little since the 1980s. It's no wonder when only 3% of national cancer research funding is spent on brain tumours. So it's down to the charity and its community of amazing supporters to urgently enact change. Look for the Brain Tumour Charity on social media to find out how you, your colleagues and your business can be the difference we need to see to defeat brain tumours for good. Motormouth is proud to be officially partnered with the Brain Tumour Charity, so a huge thank you for your support. If you can donate anything, you can also do that through the motormouth.club website or through the Brain Tumour Charity direct, and together we can help every single person affected by a brain tumour. It's season 9 and we're really excited to be once again teaming up with F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport. And let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula One this year, we're all over it. And the brilliant news is you can now be trackside thanks to F1 Experiences. Enjoy the very best race tickets and track hospitality, first-class hotels and unprecedented access you simply cannot get anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit F1Experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experiences package by using the code MOTORMOUTH when checking out online. So, what are you waiting for? Experience the 2021 F1 season firsthand with exclusive access courtesy of F1 Experiences. Get booking today at F1Experiences.com.
Hello, my name is Tim Sylvie, and today we're joined by a man who has both a German and Mauritian passport. And did you know, Harry Benjamin, that Mauritius was the only known habitat of the dodo? Yes, the long extinct and flightless dodo bird was only found in Mauritius, and even today is still considered to be the national bird of the country. It's also shown in the national coat of arms, and legend has it that the dodo actually evolved from pigeons who lost their way and found themselves isolated on the islands of Mauritius. But, my dear co-host, some Mauritian-based trivia for you here. The flag of Mauritius is one of the simplest and most colourful flags in Africa. It's made up of four different colours, horizontal stripes. What are those colours? I think I would get this.
Okay, this is going to be awful. I think it's got, from my memory, it's red.
Correct.
There's yellow on there.
There's yellow on there.
There's green.
There is green. There's one more. Come on.
And it's, is it not purple? Like a blue?
It's blue.
It's blue.
You've got it.
Yes.
It's red, blue, yellow, and green. The yellow is symbolizing light of freedom shining over the island. The red is the national struggle for independence. The blue is the nature of the country and its position in the Indian Ocean. And the green is about the year-long adventure and subtropical weather. So well done, you. I think that's two in a row you've got. So
that is two in a row. Two shows in a row. I've got a question right. I'm quite proud of myself for that one.
Well done. Now, apologies to listeners in advance. I've got a horrible cold. I promise you it's not COVID, but I do have a cold. So if my voice gives up at any point, I'm just going to lie on the floor and Harry pass over to you. But let's bring in today's guest, shall we?
I think so.
So today we're joined by Pascal Verlaine, who started his racing life in karts back in 2003 before moving up through ADAC Formula Masters, Formula 3 Euro Series and DTM, where he'd go on to be champion. He's reached the perceived top of the motorsport ladder in the former Formula 1 before moving across to its greener cousin, Formula E. He enjoyed 2 years with Mahindra before a switch to Porsche, and we're here to find out more, delving into his life, career, views and opinions. Pascal, welcome to the
Hey guys, thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure, Pascal. We're off to a good start because I managed to guess correctly the flags. Yeah. The flag. So we've got off to a good start there. But where are you at the moment? Where are you based currently?
I'm at home currently, so I'm in Switzerland. Exactly. So we are in the middle of the preparation, but currently I'm home, but soon again being in Weissach.
Yeah, and pre-season testing for Formula E just around the corner, isn't it? Well, we'll come on to a bit of that. But what we do with every single show is we like to go back to the very start with all of our guests and find out a bit more about you, Pascal, and where it all began. Where did that racing bug show itself? What was it that made you go, right, I want to be a racing driver?
Well, it started very young for me. So I've always been interested in Formula One and motorsports. I've always watched it with my dad, and when I was a kid, 4 or 5 years old, I, you know, put my alarm clock in the morning when the race was, for example, in Australia at 4 or 5 in the morning, and I woke up my dad and I said, "Hey, Formula One is on TV now. Wake up and watch it with me." So there's been so much interest always for me when I was a young kid, and then when we were in Hockenheim once as spectators, I think I was 5 years old, and I saw it live. It was so addictive to me and so interesting. And from there on, I've kept annoying my parents to go racing with me. And finally they went racing with me, but I was already 8 years old. So I kept annoying them for a long time to go karting.
Now, you mentioned your dad there, and I read in one of your previous interviews that he was a boxer. Was this a potential avenue for you to go down? Have you ever tried your hand at putting some gloves on and smashing some people around the face?
I did, but just for fun and for training. So I never went into a professional path, but for training and for fun. And in the cellar at home, we had, the boxing bag? I did that with my dad quite a bit when I was young, but never went into a professional path.
What could have been? It's good. It is. Good exercise, though, isn't it? But you're, of course, focusing yourself on four wheels. And so you started, I suppose, you finally managed to persuade them when you were 8 years old, you said. So you got up through the karting ranks and then you moved to cars. I think it was you graduated and found yourself in Formula 3 Euro Series in 2012, I think, after winning the Formula Masters. Was this the point where you were starting to feel that you really had something here and that you could really take this racing business seriously, and that not that you weren't taking it seriously, obviously, but things like Formula One, the thing you'd watched as a kid, was actually a real possibility here.
Yeah, it's weird because it's hard to say when that point was, because, for example, I won the German Championship when I was in karting, when I was from 10 to 14, I think, so four years in a row, and then I moved to Formula Masters, like Formula ADC, like you mentioned. But obviously already there, you know, I was lucky to get partners like ADAC or Deutsche Post, and, you know, they had like an academy for young drivers. So I would say it started already a bit before to get, let's say, really professional and you had the right people around, you know, like in the jury, there have been guys like Norbert Haug, for example. And I would say it started already before. But as you mentioned, 2012, when I was in Formula 3, that was really the year where it decides if you're going to be a professional racing driver or not. It's Formula 3 is really the category where I would say all the manufacturers and teams are watching at young talents.
Yeah. Does that ADAC backing and support, is that still going on now? Are there young drivers coming through that system still that perhaps don't have the deep pockets of, you know, certain other racing drivers who have a funded drive, whether it's their father or something else or state money? Is that process still happening?
The academy is still alive. Actually, there are many, many drivers. And the ADAC Academy actually is not only the target for Formula One. It's also for motorbikes, motocross, rally. So it's an academy for many categories. It's not only for single seater or touring car. It has lots of different talents, which was really interesting for me because there were a couple of kids which in my age, but then heading towards MotoGP career. So that was really cool.
That's fascinating, actually. And you mentioned touring cars, of course, and that is where you ended up, because the following year you jumped across to DTM and you were only 18 years old. And because of that, you became the youngest driver in the series history, I think, at the time, to get pole position and win a race. And I think you finished eighth in the championship there. So I switched to DTM. So, you know, suddenly you've got a roof over your head. You must have some fond memories of that time as well. But what was your sort of thought process in going into DTM at that time too?
Yeah, it came quite short term, to be honest. So I had planned another season of F3 2013. But I became already second in 2012. So it was my first year. So I wanted to become champion in 2013. We planned for another season in F3. At that time, I was a Mercedes young driver. And then just like in March or February in 2013, I got a call that Ralf Schumacher actually stops in DTM and they want to have me in the car. So I did my first race in F3 there already that season. It was a month. I can remember it quite well. I've had three, so it was three races that weekend. I had three podium finishes that weekend. I had a race win. So I was leading that championship and then I got the call, we want you next month to be in DTM. So I said, yeah, obviously that's good, because we knew already that this season for me is crucial. The next step would have been F2, but we didn't have the budget and the money to do Formula 2. So it was really important for us to get contracted or a deal done in that year so I can race again next season. And when that opportunity in DTM came, it was the perfect moment for me, because actually, we didn't have to pay the whole season in Formula 3. So we saved that budget there. And then obviously I got my first professional contract and I got paid and didn't have to pay. So that was really good. And DTM is... it's a very, very professional career, and like we saw, you know, when you did when you're doing a good job there, you can still make it to F1, and so that was good.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, you know, the likes of Formula One teams are always looking at the DTM grid and seeing what's going on, and things were going pretty well for you. I mean, you know, breaking through in DTM, a championship that you would go on to win. But in the meantime, you're signed as a Mercedes-AMG Formula One reserve driver. That phone call or email must have been a fairly life-changing moment. One of those moments where you think, holy crap, like, what is going on here? I've really made it.
It's right. So just when I won my first race in DTM and got my first pole position, we kind of announced that I'm the reserve driver as well. But actually already since the beginning of that season, I was doing all the simulator work and all the sim prep. So during the race weekends, I was the driver who was in the simulator and doing the setups and stuff like that. And also between the races, I was quite a lot in Brackley and doing all the stuff there in the sim. So I was already involved in the team, but somehow they made it official a bit later in the year. And then also being the reserve driver then.
Yeah, no, fantastic stuff. And I mean, to continue the good news stories, you move on to your second season in DTM, clocking up 5 podiums, fastest lap, 2 wins, which you dovetail in F1 with Manor. But what a season in DTM. How are your memories of that time? Must be very fond.
I really enjoyed the old DTM and also my 3 seasons there, because first of all, I think I've made huge steps from season to season. I got a really big bond with, especially with the guys from there, from Affalterbach. We had, I don't think we were the favorites. I think we were more the underdogs. We had a poor season 2013, all the Mercedes drivers. Average season, I would say, in 2014. And then, we were definitely not the favorites, but we still managed to win it 2015. We were the most consistent team, I would say. We scored in almost all the races. I only won 2 races, like you mentioned, but there have been many races where I've been on the podium or 4th or 5th. So in the end, it was just a consistency of scoring points and being there all the time and not having, I don't know, a podium and the next race a DNF or something. And that really helped us to win the championship in the end. It was very close. It was tough. You know, I was racing there against, in the end, the title fight was against Ekström, I think, Matthias Ekström, which is quite a bit older and quite a bit more experienced. So, it wasn't easy, but... in the end, it was an amazing feeling.
And then the amazing feeling, of course, continues, because you do eventually then make the step to Formula One in 2016 as well with Manor. Talk to us about how that deal came about and what it was like to line up on the F1 grid, you know, with obviously some of the biggest names in the sport. And you become, I think, the second driver from DTM to make the switch to Formula One. So showing that there is a compatibility there as well. So talk to us about that time.
Yeah, it was, I think, in the beginning of 2016 when I got the call. So actually, it still took a bit after the season to know actually what I would do next year. So obviously, I always had my DTM cockpit. And the other option was the F1 cockpit with Manor. And it took until January, so there were lots of discussions. Obviously, then when I got the call that I would get the cockpit, it was amazing. I knew it wouldn't be an easy year because... that year before, the performance was a bit worse. Like, they were like 3.5-4 seconds behind and didn't score points and so on. But I knew that it would be better that season because they are changing to the Mercedes engine. There's a bit of information going on. And it was an interesting season. We had some highlights.
Well, yeah, I mean, Austria. Yeah, one point in Austria. That looked like the celebrations looked like you'd won the race at some point. That's how much it must have meant.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, it was such a small team and really good people in that team, but it was a really small team. And if you look at where we started, like being behind four and a half seconds behind, and then in Austria, we always made it into Q3 and I think just qualified 11th or 12th and regularly being in front of Renaults or Sauber or even at that race, for example, Williams, McLaren. You know, it was an amazing result for us and definitely something unexpected.
You've already, by this point, been in the simulator, an F1 simulator, of course, and you know, you're very used to that. But can that prepare you for what it's like driving an F1 car on track? Can you put into words some of those feelings and emotions that you get when you pull away in a Formula One car for the first time?
The simulator can prepare you in terms of procedures and steering wheel, all the buttons, so everything like that, obviously a bit in terms of driving, like braking points, roundabout, but in the end, the real car is still very different, the feeling is very different, and just the G-forces, it's already a completely different thing if you're feeling G-forces or not, and yeah, at that time in Mano, we didn't have a simulator, so yeah.
you
made it probably even bigger, that result.
It was a fantastic result. Sadly, that was the highlight, I suppose, from that year in terms of point scoring. But you make the move to Sauber in 2017, which on paper looks like it should be a step up. But of course, Sauber didn't have the most competitive car that year either. I think it was 2 point scores for you, Spain and Baku, I think, from memory. But what talk to us about the Sauber year, because that ultimately proved to be your final year in F1, which I will put on and say right now is very unjust. So talk to us about that and how your feelings are towards Formula One at the moment.
Yeah, that year, honestly, I think we all expected a bit more. I think the beginning of the season was quite good, but one of the issues we had was we were running with the previous year power unit from Ferrari. So we didn't have the current power unit, and that was the problem. So in the beginning of the season, obviously the gap was not so big. But then as everyone was improving their power unit and changing the power units, obviously we were still on the one from 2016. And so the gap was just getting bigger and bigger, losing more and more performance on the straights, and that's obviously then difficult to make up in the corners. So that's why we scored, I think we had a 7th place in Barcelona and a 10th place in Baku, which was everything in the first third of the season. Mm. And then, yeah, the rest of the season was getting very difficult. So, yeah, but still it was, I would say, a good season. Yeah, we made the most out of it. But yeah, obviously didn't score as many points as we all hoped for.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsport. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including track tours, pit lane walks, VIP hospitality, and loads more. It really is the closest you can get to Formula One. And thanks to F1 Experiences, you can return to the track this year, and Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 Experience package by using the code Motormouth when booking online at f1experiences.com.
Now, post Sauber, you make a swift return to DTM, and then this new electric championship comes on your radar. How do you find yourself in Formula E for that first time alongside Jorge D'Ambrosio at Mahindra?
It was very interesting because it was something completely different. Obviously, having experienced quite a lot DTM, so touring cars and Formula One, but then jumping the first time into an electric car was, interesting, definitely something completely different. But I have to say that I really, really enjoyed it. So for me, it's really the, let's say, the way I want to go in my future. And I'm more of a single seater guy. I enjoy it more to have an open cockpit, to have the full view, feel the air, and get more impressions also from outside than being in a touring car. And I really, even though it was just one year again of DTM, then 2018, but I really missed that. So my first test then in the electric car was cool. That first season in Formula E was also really good. We had some pole positions, podiums, just missed a race win in Mexico in the last corner when I ran out of energy. But it was a good season, definitely.
Did you find did you find it difficult, or how did you adjust, going from things like DTM and obviously Formula One and then jumping into an electric car to race? How did you adapt to all the different ways that you need to drive, whether it's the regen or the tires, the very different tracks to probably what you're used to? Did you find that transition okay?
I would say I'm very good in adapting and changing my driving styles and learning. So, I just turned 27, but I've experienced so many different racing categories already. I know I'm quick in touring cars. I know I'm quick in F1, and I'm also quick in Formula E. And I have that experience in those categories. And I know I can adapt myself quite quickly to any car, probably. If you experience so different types of categories, I guess you can race anything. So, it was obviously, again, not easy, but for me it's a very special category, especially the races, like you said, with the region, managing your energy, being efficient. So I would say in F1 and DTM it's more about saving the tires, obviously one lap performance in qualifying, but the races are mostly about saving tires and in Formula E that's not so relevant. It's more relevant to be efficient and manage the energy, and that's quite a change, definitely.
And before we come on to where you are now,
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Because you made the switch across to Porsche. Just to point out for those that are listening to this, Pascal is sitting there wearing his Porsche Formula E Hugo Boss branded top there, and the watch. Now, I'm a watch guy, as Harry knows. I've bored him with watches before. What's the watch? Let's have a look at the watch.
It's a Tacho connected watch, so for everything. Like, you can wear it daily, you can wear it for sports. It has different wristbands, so you can make it quite nice for evening events as well. I really like it. I'm using it for running, for example, for cycling. It's a all-round watch.
If only this podcast is being sponsored by, right now by Tag Heuer. That would fit seamlessly into our messaging.
That sounds like a phone call that we need to make, Harry.
Yeah. I mean, Pascal, I mean, clearly you're a versatile driver. That's one thing that's been made clear. And then you make the move, of course, to Porsche in for the 2020 season after obviously the COVID-affected season that was before. So you make the jump to, you know, one of the biggest German manufacturers, one of the biggest manufacturers in the world. What was the motivation behind that move? And looking at your season, you know, it was a good season, and apart from the odd disqualification, which absolutely must have been annoying to watch, let alone have to experience it in the driving seat as well.
Mm-hmm. The motivation is clear. I want to win again. To drive for, a brand like Porsche, like the success in like the history and you know that there will be, so obviously the team just joined Formula E, but it is clear that if they are joining a category, they want to win it, and they will do everything to be competitive. And that's why it was a very easy decision for me to do that. And like you said, last season was our first season together. It was just the second season of Porsche in Formula E, so we were still quite new in this championship, I would say. But nevertheless, we had a strong season. We had a race win in Mexico, like you said, but got disqualified afterwards, and just missed out on the championship by 20 points. And if we just consider Mexico, where we lost more than 25 points, we know how good our season really was. And it's like, to be in a team is amazing. So I really enjoyed there. It's probably the best time I'm having in motorsport so far, because I really miss that feeling of being again in a competitive team and being able to win races, like turn up on a weekend and know if you do a good job, you can win that race. I didn't have that for a long time, and that's why I'm giving everything to be a champion again.
Well, let's talk about that in a bit more detail. What are the aspirations for next season? It's creeping up really quickly. We've got Diriyah in Saudi Arabia, I think the 28th of January, something like that. So it's coming at us fast. What have you discussed internally? What are your hopes and dreams for next season?
You know, Formula E is a very tough championship. Everyone is so close together. It's not like F1, for example, where you have big gaps between the teams. And that's not the case in Formula E. The same cars for all the teams, the same aero, so you are not allowed to work on the bodywork. So you're restricted in the things you can develop and you can improve. Software is a big side, so every team is allowed to do their own software. Obviously the engine and setup, but that means that everyone is a lot closer together, and our target is definitely to win races, and you know, if you're winning races, you're also in the position to win the championship, and you want to extract the most out of next season. Like I said, we're only 20 points behind our first season together, and now we have a much better relationship, much better bond. Obviously, in the beginning, it always takes a bit time until you get used to each other, until your engineer knows what I want from the car, how I'm able to drive the fastest, and also I need to learn and understand the car. And that takes a bit of time in the beginning, a couple of races. So our second half of the season was really strong, and we want to continue exactly there.
Yeah, yeah. And we've got Gen 3 cars coming in. Formula E seems to move at an incredible rate. And even in its very young life cycle so far, we're already approaching our third generation of car. What sort of changes can we expect in that Gen 3 car? Is it going to be big wholesale changes, or is it, you know, just a bit of extra kilowatt power? What can we expect?
The most important thing is more power.
Always. So,
it's quite a lot more. So that will be cool. Fast charging. So, for Gen 2, we didn't have pit stops or anything in the first generation. So I think the first four seasons of the car change during the race. So we didn't have to do that in the last couple of years. But exactly from Gen 3 onwards, they will have pit stops again or fast charging, which is the first time then, which will be really interesting and also relevant for the road cars, obviously. So that will change.
There's also some qualifying format changes happening, isn't there, for next year? Because that's obviously been a big debate amongst all of the drivers, you know, because it, depending on what group you're in, you can get the best conditions, you can get the worst conditions. Are you looking forward to seeing that change? Can you talk us through a bit what's happening there?
Well, changes for next year, that's still Gen 2, so still the current cars, but there are actually quite a few changes in going on for next year. So like you said, qualifying format. Before we had four groups, and you always like ranked by the championship order. So the first group were the first six guys in the championship, and always that group was a bit handicapped from the regulation side, because they were running. They were the first cars on track. The tracks were always a bit dirty in the beginning, so it was impossible to qualify in front if you are in group one. And in order to make it fairer, more fair for everyone, we have a new qualifying format now, which I think is really, really good. So you have 10 minutes, so two different groups, 10 minutes, and you need to qualify in the top four to make it into the duels. And then you are driving one against one with another driver, and just the winner makes it through to the next round. So then you have a quarterfinal, so on until the final. And that's the last two, obviously, are driving then for pole position. So that's very good, really interesting. What else is changing? A bit more power in the race. So we are increasing power from 200 to 220 kilowatts, more power in attack mode, and also in fan boost mode, which is always 250 kilowatts now. How they manage the races with safety car and virtual safety car is also changing. So they will kind of add time to the race length in the end, and not reduce the energy how we had it in the past, and it was quite difficult for some teams to make it to the end. Like Valencia was a perfect example for that. There will be clearer for everyone and more easy to manage. And that's also a good change.
I'm pleased.
You've certainly done your homework. That's for sure. You know your stuff.
I'm pleased. I know everything.
I'm pleased that you've explained the new Formula E qualifying format so clearly, because quite frankly, I've read it in a load of places and it went completely over my head. So that it clears it up completely. We're coming towards the end, so we'll fire some quick fire questions in your direction in a moment. One question I've got for you: a lot of our listeners are involved in motorsport in one way or another. Some of them are young carters and young drivers working their way up through the sport. As we all know, motorsport is incredibly expensive, even at the very junior levels, and hard to break into. There's a lot of good drivers out there. What would you say to young drivers who are perhaps karting at the moment? They're looking to make their next move. They don't have a big bank account. What can they do to try and improve their chances?
Honestly, it's a very difficult question, because first of all, everyone is obviously in a bit of a different situation. Obviously, I can relate a bit on my career, which was I never did it for. Obviously, I did it for fun. Like I really enjoyed being on the racetrack and being like, especially in karting, then every weekend in our little motorhome and traveling with my parents from track to track. But I always had the goal and the ambitions to be the best one from out of everyone, and I wanted to beat the other guys. And not only like winning the championship, I wanted to be first in every race. And if I wasn't first, I was, I think, the most unhappy kid you can imagine for days. It was not just for that day or for an hour. It was for days. I was so annoyed. I was, sorry for the word, I was so pissed off. And yeah, I think that's the most important thing. You really need to want it, and you really in your career there are many setbacks and obviously also many negative experiences, but you need to learn from them and you need to learn from mistakes and especially not make them twice. Obviously then it's hard to say an advice for later on which path to go, or you know, it depends on also a bit of luck. You need to be in a good team, a competitive team, yeah. And so on. But I think the most important thing for yourself is you need to be ambitious. You really need to want it, like to learn and to, you know, knowing the regulations, is like for me, for example, it's not really important for me to know the regulations about next season, what's changing and so on. But I want to know everything. Like, I want to know not only everything about driving, I also want to know everything about the car, about the regulations, what is changing. You know, I just want to be informed overall. At the end, to be, there are many, many good drivers, but to be the best is just that little bit of extra work you need to do, that little bit of extra training you need to do, that little bit more work in terms of, training your driving, watch the data and so on. You know, it's just small things at the end make a big difference.
It's that extra little 1%, isn't it? And I think you either have that in you or you don't, no matter what the career that you have chosen is. If you don't have that extra 1%, you are going to get left behind. I think we had an interesting chat with Liam Lawson, the current F2 driver from New Zealand, who, you know, from the furthest place on the planet. And he was so single-minded in his approach. He was like, there was just no way I was going to do anything else. I will get to Formula One. That's my one and only goal. And he'll do everything. He'll knock over anything in his path to get there. And I think you've got to have that sort of drive. Now, let's start to come on to some of our final questions. Difficult one for you, but can you try and pinpoint what's been your biggest highlight of your career so far?
It's hard to pick one. Winning DTM was definitely one of the highlights. Was an amazing feeling. Obviously, driving in an F1 car is amazing as well. So that's another highlight. And I think, you know, with all that experiences I've had in the last couple of years, being now in an amazing environment again, and being in a competitive environment and having a great team behind me like Porsche is another highlight. And I really appreciate that situation I'm currently in. And I want to make the best out of it, and I'm giving everything.
And I'm sure you will. If there's one thing we've learned, is that you are an incredible racing driver, but do you have any other hidden talents that we might not know about?
I'm quite good at playing drums.
Hey, we've got a member for the band.
Welcome to the band. Go. Yeah.
But I'm quite bad at singing. So
that's all right. That's all right.
I could only play the drums.
We'll stick you at the back. It's fine. Don't worry. Well, flip that on its head then. What are you crap at? What are you just absolutely terrible at?
Singing.
Well, yeah, that's your, fair. Sorry. Yeah. How's your cooking?
It's getting better and better.
Okay.
So now I would say I'm quite a good chef. So,
okay, very nice.
Yeah, yeah, it's not bad. I don't know. Can't think of.
We can stick with the singing.
Let's stick with singing.
Let's stick with that. And then I suppose we don't ask this question actually to that many people, and we've just got a couple more, and then we'll do our final three. But do you have a racing hero?
I was a big fan when I was young. I was a big fan of Mika Häkkinen and Michael Schumacher. So those were my two heroes when I grew up. Obviously, the older you get, you see it with different eyes. But definitely, when I was a young kid, those two were my heroes, and I was cheering for them.
Both incredible drivers, and incidentally, you've probably watched it—the Schumacher film on Netflix. I watched for the first time very recently. My God, that is a brilliant but quite difficult thing to watch, and very emotional, and I'm not afraid to say that I sobbed like a child when Mick Schumacher came on and started talking about his father, and that was just far too much for me. I couldn't cope anymore. But obviously Mika Häkkinen features quite heavily in that film too, a fantastic driver, so two excellent choices. The long-term plan, where are we going to see you in 20 years' time? Do you think that far ahead? I mean, you've got plenty of racing left in you, but what comes later?
What comes later is a good question. So currently I'm actually like studying a lot and reading books and stuff like that, which I've never done, to be honest, when I was a bit younger. But now I'm like, trying to, like you said, to figure out what could be interesting for me to do after my career, and to kind of work on. And I would like to have my own company one day. It is important, first of all, to do something after your racing career, but then also to obviously earn money after your racing career. And as I said, I still have a couple of years, definitely in racing.
Couple, yeah. Actually, well, just
10 or 15 10 or 15 years. But I would like to, at one point to also do something else and like I said, have my own company and have a, we say in Germany, have a second. Do you say a second leg, like a second standing...
A backup plan?
No, not a backup plan.
Like a second career, like after your first one.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be so. But before you even get to that stage, I'm just curious, because obviously Porsche are quite heavily involved in sports cars as well, naturally, and Le Mans and perhaps hypercar and DPI and things like that. Is that ever something that you might want to have a go at someday?
Definitely. Been in so many different categories, and that's definitely the one category I want to explore as well and have a go as well. And I would like to do it one day.
Nice. Well, it is. I think it would be a great watch actually as well. Now we have come to the end. We've got a final three questions for you, which we ask to all of our guests. It's brought to you by F1 Experiences. Tim, do you want to kick things off?
Yes, indeed. Pascal, what has you excited at this very moment?
The new season?
Yep.
Nice.
Short answer.
Yeah, no, season. Good. Well, that's good. You got me in the car next week, I think, or in a couple of weeks at least. What is now, actually, Formula E has some of the best calendars, or some of the best race locations out of any kind of motorsport calendar. What is your favorite one on the Formula E calendar?
It was Cape Town. Unfortunately, we are not going there. It got cancelled, but I think then the following year we are going to be there. Then I would say Vancouver.
Yeah.
Never been there, and it's a new track, so it should be quite cool.
Yeah, very nice city, very green city. Should be good. Right, your final question before we let you get on with your day. What are you scared of?
Turbulences in a plane.
Oh,
really? We haven't had that one, surprisingly. Turbulence. And I suppose you've got to do a fair amount of flying, haven't you?
Yeah, I guess, you know, everyone is saying some animals, so I just wanted to say something else. But yeah, I hate it. Like, I'm a really relaxed person, but when there are turbulences in a plane and we are flying overseas, I hate it. Like, I'm
shut your eyes, hold on to the seat.
Who is grabbing the seat, yeah, and who is watching the faces of everyone else and watching the stewards' faces. When they are quiet, it's fine. But if they get a bit nervous as well, I know, okay, now it's serious. And So, yeah, I hate it.
Brilliant. Oh, it's a bit of a shame that you have to travel so much. But, oh, well, I'm sure you manage eventually. But, look, Pascal Wehrlein, it has been an absolute pleasure to chat with you and get to know you a little bit more, find out about the early starts of your career, your F1 days, and, of course, what you're currently up to in Formula E. And we can't wait to see how, obviously, next season goes with Porsche and what the future holds for you as well, Pascal. But, Pascal Wehrlein, thank you so much for coming on to the Motormouth podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages, which include the best race tickets, first class hotels, travel and exclusive behind the scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend. F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So to book your F1 Experiences package, head online to f1experiences.com. And if you enter code Motormouth, you'll get 5% off too. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_, Instagram at Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.